You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of December 8th, 2023. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where, for my sins, I watched the fourth and final presidential primary debate of the Republican Party, including the George Will ad pimping News Nation. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Except that's a lie.
That's a lie.
I found out today there's two more debates. So, oh my God, it's going to be bad for me. Bad for old Driftglass.
And if you haven't gotten enough Driftglass this week, and really, who has?
I have.
You're on the broadcast again.
I am. But I just actually left them. I blew them off to be with you, honey, because I love you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And was Digby on with you as well?
Digby was on. We're the regulars. We're now the post-debate commentary regulars. So
fantastic. If you want to go and listen to the Bradcast, just Google Bradcast. You'll find it. Go look for it. It's great.
Go for it. They're everywhere.
And it's Digby and Driftglass. What more could you ask for?
And there's no swears. So I have all these swears.
Oh, because you're on broadcast radio, right, so you can't cuss.
So I have extra swears with me right now.
You have to say that fucker, Vivek Ramaswamy. Mm-hmm. You have to say it.
Poopy head. He's a poopy head.
He's a poopy head.
Yep.
Thank you, Driftglass, for putting up the Christmas lights outside.
You bet.
We don't have very many interior decorations in our house.
No.
You know, because of the cats.
And me.
One of my friends put up a picture of a fir tree car deodorizer that hangs from the window, and he just put that in the corner and said, "My tree's up." And I replied, "Cats would eat that too."
Yeah, doesn't matter.
doesn't matter.
And we're not going to drill holes in the ceiling to hang trees upside down, which is what some people do.
No, we're not going to do any of that.
No.
But Wonkette has a very funny post up about Jill Biden and, you know, her Pizzagate White House. Let's face it.
Oh, it's
and what a disappointment it is compared to Melania Trump's concrete bloody tampon Christmas that was, you know. I recommend that. Very funny. And I've been busy this week writing a letter to your friend and mine, Driftglass, Xavier Becerra.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. He's not really. I don't know if he listens to the pod or not.
Everyone does.
If he does, everyone listens to the pod. Everyone listens to our podcast. Okay, everyone does. Xavier Becerra, if that name sounds familiar to you, but you can't quite place it, mm-hmm. He is the current Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Biden administration.
Oh, he's got one of them government jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those government jobs, yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I wrote him a letter this week. And so I'm going to, as Driftglass said when I read it to him, he said, "This is content."
Yeah, this is content.
Come on. Everything's content.
Cut out all the personal.
You can write the stamp off on our tax return when you mail this to is it Javier? I want to be right. I think it's Javier. Mm-hmm. Spelled with an X.
Well, it could be Xavier. Could be
Xavier Becerra. Mm-hmm.
But we're
I've written to Secretary Becerra. "Dear Secretary Becerra, I am writing to express both gratitude for and frustration about the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. I know that without the ACA, my family would not have health insurance. Thank you to all the fellow Democrats who made this law possible. I am confused by the math, however. My understanding is that at tax time, I can deduct any health insurance costs that exceed 7.5% of my gross income if I itemize my return. However, in 2024, my health insurance premiums alone will be 12% of my gross income for 2023. That does not count copays and deductibles. For the first time in my life, my monthly health insurance premium is more than my monthly mortgage payment. The deductible for both my husband and myself is $5,600 each. Given that I have health concerns that have forced me to meet my individual $5,600 deductible, in two consecutive years. I expect the same will happen in 2024. Insurance industry algorithms already determine the length of any hospital stay I may have. I expect they are also using their AI capabilities to calculate the extent they can bleed my finances dry based on my credit rating and untapped home equity. As of this writing, I have 1,683 days until I am eligible for Medicare. Yes, I am counting. Is the problem that the Republican House would rather give me a tax refund than an adequate healthcare subsidy? I have abandoned hope that reining in costs from the insurers themselves is possible. I certainly hope Speaker Hakeem Jeffries and Team 2025 resolve this unjust math and help those of us on ACA plans avoid taking out loans on our homes in order to stay healthy for another year. If over 7.5% of income spent on healthcare is deductible, we should not be required to lend the federal government the overage until tax time. Sincerely, Francis Langham. And I am copying this letter to Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, who is my congresswoman from Illinois 13, and I might even send a copy to Hakeem Jeffries himself. Since I'm on his mailing list,
yeah,
I think
are.
He should be on mine.
He always looks forward to hearing from Blue Gal.
Yeah. And I got through that letter without crying, which is great.
Yep.
I have been crying about this three times this week already.
Yeah.
So just know that we will be doing a GoFundMe to pay for health insurance and healthcare next year.
At some point next year.
Yep. I have to stop apologizing for that. And it's weird because I actually helped a colleague of mine with a GoFundMe last month. Who has cancer, you know, and I am so blessed to have, you know, the health that I do. I know I have health problems, but I'm responding to treatment and so forth. And there are people that are sicker than I am and have greater healthcare bills than I do. And it's just not right. This is not how the ACA was designed to work. And a vibrant, healthy Democratic Congress would not allow this to be this way.
Yep.
So,
and gutting the ACA or limiting the ACA or block granting the ACA has been all over the Republican Party the last 2 months, like a rash.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody has a plan to replace it with something great in 2 weeks, but the first thing they're going to do is get rid of it. So,
yeah,
we are right back to where we were, which is, there's this thing that benefits millions of Americans that's desperately needed that the Republican Party is hell-bent on killing.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. This is my awkward transition to the next topic, which is late-stage TV brain, which is something I wrote about this week. It's, you know what? A lot of our allies now are the same people who voted to take away your health care.
Right, right.
And I don't hear them apologizing for that or saying they would do it differently or saying that things should be done better or even
or saying that Donald Trump is a dangerous person to elect in part because he will take away health care from millions of Americans.
No, because if you believe
that's not the issue, right?
If you believe that Republicans, even our never Trump allies, even the recently former Republicans, operate off a set of principles which transcend party, they really believe X, Y, and Z, then they must have really believed it was important to kill the Affordable Care Act back when they were in the Republican Party. They fought like dogs against it. They applauded every time the House whipped itself into a frenzy and voted to overturn it. They were all on board with getting rid of my family's health care and bankrupting millions of Americans. And here's the thing. This is why I do not trust recently former Republicans. This is why the concept of seeing these people showing up all over my liberal TV as heroes of the resistance is so unsettling. And here's my explanation. Once upon a time, this is based on an essay that my late friend Harlan Ellison wrote in as a foreword to his book, Strange Wine. It was about Dan Blocker, who played a guy named Hoss Cartwright on Ponderosa. Big guy, nice guy, good actor, played the same character for 14 years. So he was in people's homes every week for 14 damn years. And he was approached by this woman when he was out and about in public. And she said, you know, Hoss, when you get back to the Ponderosa, get rid of that Chinese guy who does your cooking for you. I'll cook for you. I'll cook for your whole family. It'll be great. And Dan Blocker had to say very gently, ma'am, my name is Dan Blocker. I'm an actor. I play Haas on television, but I live in such and such in Santa Barbara with my family and blah, blah, blah. And apparently her face went blank for a second. And it was like, yeah, but when you get back to the Ponderosa, get rid of that Chinese guy and I'll come cook for you. Because she couldn't distinguish between the actor she saw on television and the real person that was the real person. And and in the essay, Harlan Ellison recounts a couple of other examples of, you know, a woman getting smacked around with an umbrella as she came out of a clothing store because she played a villain on a TV soap opera.
Yep.
And was attacked because you broke up that nice family. This is the result of the TV brain as it used to be. This is the stuff that like Ray Bradbury wrote about in Fahrenheit 451, where you have a room with four walls of television.
Yeah.
And you call it your family, and they edit the script so that your name is inserted in the script so that you blot out the real world. The world, as far as you're concerned, your friends and your family are your TV friends and family because they're always there and they always love you.
Right.
Now, this flipped around, I don't know when exactly, but now people are used to seeing actors being different people all the time. So you see Idris Elba in The Wire, and then you see Idris Elba in Hijack. And nobody says, hey, I don't trust that guy who's trying to save that plane full of people because I know he's a drug lord in Baltimore.
Right, right.
Nobody thinks Bryan Cranston really cooks meth, you know? And by the way,
you can't be LBJ. You cook meth.
Yeah. Aren't you Malcolm's dad?
Yes, right.
Wow, Malcolm's dad has fallen on hard times. People are used to seeing actors change their roles. The woman who's in Fargo, I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but is also on a famous TV show called Ted Lasso. Yes. And she plays a very different character than that. And one does not discredit the other. We understand now that people who are in the performance business change costumes and are different people in different roles. And nobody gets upset when that happens on sports teams. When your hero, the guy, the asshole who's quarterbacking against your team and kills your team every time is a villain until he changes jersey and your team drafts him and then he becomes a hero because now he's playing for you. That's fine. The place where this doesn't work, where it's extremely dangerous, is in politics and in the media. When people change their jersey and suddenly become a completely different person, because in politics and in reporting, in journalism, you are presumed to be operating from a set of principles, things you believe. And to watch one Republican after another show up on MSNBC, completely reversing everything they professed to believe 2 minutes ago. And now it's, oh my God, the Republican Party's full of Republicans. These crazy people are trying to destroy America. And by the way, since I also want to retain my conservative bona fides, liberals are bad too. It's the extremes on both sides. And we did a whole No Fair Remembering stuff about Michael Steele, you know, former head of the RNC.
This week we did that.
Yeah. Story week. I'm going back to Steve Gilliard writing extensively about Michael Steele. Michael Steele is now a hero of the resistance. Michael Steele is now just a good old guy who shows up on the Joy Reid show, and he's so affable and reasonable, and he's still a Republican, that now he has his own show on Saturday mornings. They're giving him a part of a panel show that he'll be appearing on at MSNBC. It is enormously weird to me that how many of my liberal brothers and sisters just accept this, that he just changed costume. Yeah, he was this thing then, but he's a completely different thing now. But we should just accept that. What he was doing beforehand has nothing to do with who he is now. That is true when you are playing Othello. It is not true when you are supposed to be driven by principles that you held so deeply that it took a riot at the Capitol to dislodge you from them.
Yep.
And if you want to see how this spins apart, look at Steve Schmidt.
Steve Schmidt. Well, he did it really fast, didn't he?
That's the part where it fell apart. There wasn't enough time elapsed between changing roles. So Steve Schmidt, villain. Sarah Palin, oh, hero. He's a villain. Now he's a, oh, he, Howard Schultz, now he's a hero. He gave up Howard Schultz, and now he's back to saying mean things about Donald Trump. Oh, villain. Now he's back with Dean Phillips. Yeah, he has changed costume so many times. It's like a Cher concert. You know, he's gone through so many costume changes in such a short period of time that the falsehood of what this process is was made bare. Same thing with Matthew Dowd. Matthew Dowd has gone through multiple iterations of what he really believes as an adult. And he just gets to get away with it because he's on TV, and the new TV brain does not hold anyone responsible for anything that they were 5 minutes ago, because it's all just TV. And you know, when it's just TV and it's TV series, when it's just TV and it's sports, that's fine. When it's just TV, when it's all dismissed, it's just people changing costumes, and democracy is at stake, and the principles that we believe in as Democrats are at stake, then it gets to be really important as to who's on your side and who's not. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have to say about that.
Well, and, you know, I don't want anybody to be confused when they see Driftglass on The Golden Bachelor. He's not actually golden or a bachelor. He's actually watching Star Trek Enterprise, and his wife is next to him in the bed knitting. So that's real life. Mm-hmm. And
I'll be wearing a wig, too. So,
yeah. He'll be wearing a wig.
Yeah, I'm Ricardo
Montalban. In The Golden Bachelor, too.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll be sporting an accent. I don't know. Maybe I shall be very interesting. Maybe I shall be an Irishman. I don't know. It doesn't matter because it's just TV.
It's just TV. Mm-hmm. Well, this week, media went from comatose to at least semi-comatose when it comes to the threat of Donald Trump. I think everyone listened to our Thanksgiving podcast is what
everyone listens to our podcast.
Because everyone listens to it, as Joe Glass always says. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I find it comforting and a little bit, get a little bit of solace out of the fact that, you know, the Atlantic Monthly devoted an entire issue to the danger of a second Trump presidency.
Uh-huh.
And that got attention. Regardless of how we feel about Liz Cheney, at the moment, she is saying all of the right things about Donald Trump. That is true.
That's a true fact.
That is a true statement. But what interested me was the times at which people push back on this, that somehow this isn't something we need to talk about. And one of the things that was really interesting, as you mentioned about last night's debate, was the extent to which everyone except Chris Christie would not talk about Donald Trump and the dangers of him.
Right. Yep.
So the classic example of the pushback, and probably the hardest pushback, was Bret Baier yesterday was on the Hugh Hewitt show.
Oh, Hugh Hewitt, friend of the pod.
And, under my understanding, he's not friend of the pod. My understanding is that today Hugh Hewitt was on the Bret Baier show. So
that's
they're
sweet.
They're doing a square dance of a type.
Mm-hmm.
But Bret Baier and Hugh Hewitt are talking about how, you know, all us lefties and media types are just hysterical about this Donald Trump thing. And it's not really such a big deal.
Crackpot alarmists. That's what
crackpot alarmists. So and interestingly enough, Bret Baier even goes so far as to act as if he's never heard of Trump refusing to leave office.
What?
So I wrote a post about this yesterday at Crooks and Liars, and I began my post with a quote from, ironically, The Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
But this quote is from 2012.
Oh, the before time.
The before time, right. Mm-hmm. And it is a quote from Andrew Nagorski, who is the author of a book called Hitlerland. This is from the interview that The Atlantic did with him, again, in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, if you look back to the very beginning of Hitler's rhetoric about the Jews, it was all there. The talk about extermination and vermin. He didn't spell out exactly what would happen in the Holocaust, but he gave a pretty good indication of its overall thrust. When someone lobs these kind of rhetorical bombs, it's sort of a natural human tendency to say, oh, that's just a figure of speech. They don't really mean it. It's just a way to whip up supporters. Now, I'm impressed that this is 2012. I really am.
Uh-huh.
But at a certain point, I'm continuing with the quote, people began to witness things that were unbelievably horrifying. And of course, there was Kristallnacht. After that, even the people who at first wanted to dismiss every incident as local people getting out of control began to take the problem seriously.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a difference between being socially anti-Semitic, quote unquote, and seeing people beaten on the streets. We have already seen families separated. We've seen that already.
Yes, we have.
Don't let that drop down the memory hole. We've seen children crying because their mother is being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen children reunited with their families after months and being so traumatized they don't respond to their mothers.
We've seen Donald Trump and generals in uniform tear gassing and rubber bulleting a public park.
Right.
Just
so he could have a photo shoot.
Hold up a Bible in front of a church to show how religious he is.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And that was his daughter's idea. It was a White House staffer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So back to my article about Brett Baer and Hugh Hewitt. And they, the two of them, agree that Trump's rhetoric is no big deal. And besides, we all survived Trump's first term. No, we didn't.
No,
we did not survive. A million of us didn't. And if he's elected again, we'll do what we did the first time. So here's the quote from Brett Baer. I just think people have to put things in perspective. Yes, Donald Trump has on the stump said some things that have raised some eyebrows and raised some concerns. But did people, for the most part, in the first Trump administration live their lives? And were there checks and balances? Yes, there were. I think some perspective on all this is really important. And Hugh Hewitt replied, I think it's utterly hysterical because I teach constitutional law and the Constitution is very strong. And my only reply to that is enjoy your place in history, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We may not survive this, but we'll have your words written down.
Is this the same Hugh Hewitt who used to have a show on MSNBC, Blue Gal?
Yes.
Very same
MSNBC,
one,
MSNBC,
huh?
Who is not our friend. Yes, it is.
No, no. There's a long and glorious history of people who are now never Trump, back when they were Republicans, calling liberals crackpot alarmists for saying, the Republican Party is on a terrifying trajectory, and unless you fix it, we're all screwed.
Right.
And then a handful of those people woke up one day and turned out we were right. The Republican Party had elected a lunatic and a dictator and a racist and a monster. And they said so. And that's when Hugh Hewitt and his crew kicked in and said, no, you're being crackpot and alarmist now. And suddenly all those never Trumpers found out what it was like to be a liberal for the last 30 years.
Exactly.
Except they can't bear that. So they pretend we don't exist either.
There was one other topic, wasn't there, Driftglass, that was not mentioned on the debate.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. You want me to talk about that?
Yeah, talk about that.
Well, as you know, I watched the debate, the whole thing, including the George Will ads for News Nation. Apparently, the mortal remains of George Will now work for News Nation, which is creepy. They brought in Tom Fitton. Remember Tom Fitton?
Oh, yeah. The guy with the two small shirts.
Yeah, he rolled his sleeves down and put on a jacket for Judicial Watch to come and ask a couple of questions, because why not? This was a Republican debate designed to lob softballs to Republican candidates. So there was a whole lot of talk about the terror of trans people and how they're ruining America and child mutilation and using bathrooms, men using bathrooms. There was not one fucking word about abortion at all mentioned by anyone. This is a debate that was moderated by three women. Not one of them decided.
Unbelievable.
I mean, hey, what about that abortion thing, guys? It kind of crushed you during the last election. And Nikki Haley, you want a 6-week ban? Is that right? Not one mumbling word about any of that. And not one word raised by anyone on the panel to any other person, because it's one of the, you know, we all hate each other. We can all agree that we're despicable people, but we're not going to raise the issue of abortion because it hurts everybody here. So they were just really quiet about it. I thought Chris Christie did a pretty good job of doing a couple of things. He acted as almost a moderator himself.
That was the only way he was going to get the topics addressed to him that he wanted to talk about, right?
Well, he like swung into action. He did what the moderators were supposed to do, because Ron DeSantis didn't answer any fucking questions. Ron DeSantis would just say to every question, you know, I served in Iraq, and when I was in Iraq, blah, 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 and, you know, something, something, something. Joe Biden, terrorism, traitor. And one of them was, is Donald Trump unfit to be president? And DeSantis mumbled around and talked around and said, you know, Father Time eventually wins all battles or something. Father Time always wins. And I'm thinking of a younger generation is something, 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 something. And that's when Chris Christie did, and he did this like two or three times with Ron DeSantis, which was, hold on. You've noticed all right that Ron DeSantis didn't answer the fucking question. It's a real simple question, yes or no, but Ron DeSantis won't answer questions. Why won't you answer a direct question, Ron? And that's when Ron turned into Marco Rubio for about 30 seconds because he couldn't stop repeating the same line he'd memorized. His response, just, why aren't you answering the question, Ron? It's like, well, Father Time comes for us all, you know, and it's time for a younger blah, blah, blah. And Christy was like, see what I mean? He won't answer the fucking question. And the other thing he did really well was these three mopes don't want to talk about Donald Trump, who was a coward who wouldn't show up to talk to us. And we're all pretending that he's not beating us all by 40 points, which is ridiculous.
So remind me who the four people were on the stage. It was Christy. And Nikki Haley. And Vivek Ramaswamy. And
Ron DeSantis.
And DeSantis. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And the most lunatic of them all was Vivek Ramaswamy, who said, you know, 9/11 was an inside job. And J6 was a setup. And
he's really going for that RFK Jr. vote.
Oh, he is. He absolutely is. The great replacement theory is actually Democratic policy. That's what Democrats are up to. And I believe he mentioned Martians killed John Kennedy. I'm not sure about the last one, but it was close. And occasionally he'd say something that
he's
was interesting.
That last one up.
I am. Oh, just barely, though. Just barely. And he was there to be an absolute asshole. He called Nikki Haley a fascist. He called everybody liars. He was just a jerk, but that's his thing. And as I said on the broadcast earlier today, the only reason to watch this exercise in futility, because all these people are losing to Donald Trump by a whole bunch of points, was to understand, to get a microcosm of what's going on inside the Republican Party. It's like four different stool samples, all of which demonstrate something about the Republican Party. Oh, Chris Christie represents people on the Republican Party who don't like Donald Trump, don't think he should be president. Got it. Nikki Haley represents people desperately trying not to say something mean about Donald Trump because they're screwed, but want to edge around it, want to triangulate every issue, even though she's up for a 6-week abortion ban.
Right.
Ron DeSantis is just a bloodthirsty robot thug from Florida. And Vivek Ramaswamy is the beloved of incels and tech bros everywhere because he's them.
He
clearly hates women an awful lot. So it was interesting to that effect. And it was interesting to see what they talked about when it came to donors. Ron DeSantis bitched about Nikki Haley getting all these billionaire donors rushing to her cause. She said, you're just pissed because they used to be your donors, Ron, and now they've abandoned you. So it showed you a lot about what the component elements are of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. The majority of the Republican Party didn't show up because the majority of the Republican Party is Donald Trump, and who the donors were cheering for, who the donors wanted to see on that stage. And the fact that when Chris Christie talked, everybody got real quiet or they booed him. And he said, look, we're not going to get anywhere without telling the truth. Now, of course, he's not a big one for the truth in other venues.
No,
other
he certainly isn't talking about his record as governor of New Jersey.
No. And all of these people are terrible and should not be anywhere near the White House. But he was there to do his thing. And if anybody gained any ground, it probably was Christie. It's not going to be enough.
I was going to say, you know, if Trump had listened to Chris Christie at the beginning of his administration and hired the people Chris Christie vetted for him, he'd be reelected now.
Yes, he would.
He'd still be president. But that was not to be.
Nope.
Look, there is a one-day strike going on against the Washington Post right now.
Yeah.
We've been instructed, those of us who do not cross picket lines, to not go to the Washington Post website. Don't quote from it today. Don't block quote it in your posts. Just stay off in defense of the writers and employees of the Washington Post getting what they deserve in terms of pay and benefits. So I would recommend to all of you that tomorrow, when the one-day strike is strike is over, to go and read The Worst Take of the Year. It's going to win an award at Crooks and Liars this year.
Yeah.
We're putting together our Crooky Awards for the end of the year, and this is definitely going to win. The columnist Dan Balls talking about how billionaires have taken over our political system and judicial system. And no one could have predicted that this would happen, and no one planned for it.
Right, right.
And it's as if Citizens United and Leonard Leo and the Koch brothers and all of that never happened.
Well, and
it's just all of a sudden.
The Gilded Age never happened. Robber Barons never happened.
Even though there's a show on HBO about that I hate watch. So
the Teapot Dome never happened.
Never happened.
It is. And Dan Balz is really like in that David Broder universe, late David Broder, who just was completely, he had one thing he always wrote about, which was how both sides are extreme. And he went to his grave, literally to his grave, continuing to pretend that both sides, the problem was both sides and the reasonable center, well, blah, blah, blah. And there are a bunch of these, frankly, old white guys. Well, that's not true. There's Kathleen Parker and a bunch of other old op-ed columnists who should have retired 20 years ago, should have retired 30 years ago, and have one note left on their flute, and they play it all the time. And apparently,
well, they've clearly been asleep for 20 or 30 years too. Yeah.
Well, and no one's ever shaken them
awake. They're not noticing what's happening.
You know, that's the job of your editor, to come down and wake you up and say, did you notice that billionaires took over our political process and donors have been calling the tune for like
and
decades?
And dark money has taken over our political system, especially from one party. Yeah.
And it's one thing to say that thing in the men's room when you're talking to your friends, but when you put your name under it in a major American newspaper, expect to be dragged, but also expect that nobody's going to care because nobody keeps op-ed columnists or journalists in check. Nobody checks their work.
So,
nobody asks.
Like I said, don't go read Washington Post today. Nope. Later in the weekend, you can check this out. And it really is. He was raked over the coals for it.
Yeah. I would like to talk for a second about an opinion column I found by accident.
Okay.
Because I didn't even know it existed. It surprised me. This last week was Liz Cheney week everywhere.
Yep.
She was on every show on MSNBC. She was being interviewed by every Never Trumper. She's got a book out that's going to sell gazillion, billion, jillion copies. And it was this victory tour for Never Trumpers because they have exactly two people they can point to say, see. And one of them is Liz Cheney. And so everywhere this week, except for three places, Charlie Pierce's Esquire column.
Yeah.
and Charlie Pierce on the Stephanie Miller show, where he said, look, you know, Liz Cheney is a Cheney. And I believe, and this is a statement I would like to pass along to you, a sentiment that I agree with 100%. Yes, it's all hands on deck. No, it's not all hands on the wheel.
That's right. That's exactly right. Thank you, Charlie Pierce.
You know, your party is the one that turned to shit, Liz. You helped it turn to shit, Liz. Mm-hmm. You and all of your horrible friends are the people that brought this on yourself. And we're here to clean up your mess. So if you want to vote for us, send us money, support us, that's great. But you can just shut the fuck up about all the things Democrats are doing wrong and what's wrong with both sides. And how come liberals this and that, which is the subtext of every goddamn Never Trumper out there in the world. They cannot leave it alone. They can't admit they were just 100% wrong. It still has to be partially us. So everywhere except my blog and Charlie Pierce's and this one column on the MSNBC opinion page, I did not know really. I knew sort of, but that MSNBC had an opinion page.
About it because Steve Bannon writes there.
Right.
And he writes for Matto Blog, and he writes occasionally on the opinion page. Yeah.
It didn't register with me. I sort of knew it was there, but it didn't register. And that Anna Marie Cox, the former Wonkette, writes there now occasionally, which I didn't know. I thought, honestly, she used to have a podcast. She's one of the people that put Rick Wilson back in the spotlight. Her good friend Rick Wilson gave him oxygen when she should not have done that. She also wrote the New York Times column about Glenn Beck's miraculous conversion to Never Trumpism.
She got paid to write that.
She did.
Yes.
And it gave him the rocket fuel he needed, part of it anyway, to scam everybody for about 6 to 8 months before he reverted to type and said, no, I really love Donald Trump and fuck that. So that's who she was. Last I heard about Anna Marie Cox, who's a good writer, writes about science fiction, and I'm nothing against her personally. She had divorced her second husband, I think. She had moved to Texas from Minnesota and was writing and speaking almost exclusively about mental health, bipolar disorder, which she said she has, and her recovery from alcoholism, which is all great. It's all great. That's terrific. And if you spent the rest of your life doing that, God bless you. I have nothing but praise for people who do that. And she's a good writer and good for her.
Yeah, she's probably helping a lot of people with that.
I bet she is. And good on her. Then I stumbled across her column on MSNBC's opinion page. And oh my goodness, I was looking for stuff about Liz Cheney and about opinions about Liz Cheney. And I'm
bracing myself. Is she with you or you and Charlie Pierce or against you?
Oh, she's me and her and Charlie are all in the same little boat.
Really?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. That's really interesting.
It's a long thing, and I'll give you
happens when you get off of alcohol.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I get that she has deeply considered opinions. Mm-hmm. And I understand and appreciate what she used to do and what she's doing now. But this surprised me. It surprised me she was writing there and about politics, and I thought she gave that up. But here's the headline, quote, "I have bad news for the progressives currently beguiled by Liz Cheney. Liberals beware. This political transformation is not, in fact, very transformative," unquote.
Hmm.
It's a very long article. We'll put the link in our show notes, but I'll read you just a couple of paragraphs to give you a flavor. Anna Marie Cox continues, quote, "Cheney's new book, quote, Oath and Honor, A Memoir and a Warning," unquote, "has become an immediate bestseller based on its promise to bring even more receipts to the Trump indictment party." And she does have receipts. "Her message to anyone who has ever needed a pussy hat hits right in the feels. Donald Trump is, quote, a grave threat," unquote, "to American democracy. A man, quote, willing to torch the Constitution," unquote, "and thus he has to be defeated and people can't be bystanders," unquote. All of which is true. No argument here. Ironically, Ms. Cox goes on, her last book had an equally dire warning about Democrats post-Barack Obama. Huh. Quote, "Our next president must be committed to restoring America's power and strength," unquote. She and her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney, wrote in, quote, "Exceptional, Why the World Needs a Powerful America." Quote, "Our security and the survival of freedom depends on it," unquote. It's almost as if they were calling for our next president to make America great again.
No fair remembering stuff, Anna Marie Cox.
Yeah, that she wrote a book before that? Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
She continues, "Others have illustrated the straight line that connects the rabid anti-Obama xenophobia and racism of the Tea Party movement, a movement Cheney embraced, and the mob that forced its way into the Capitol on January 6th. The ideological genealogy doesn't make Cheney responsible for January 6th, nor does it mean we should take her current warnings less seriously. But it should temper the applause she gets in 2023 for making the same observations that plenty of people made in 2015. Democrats should be wary of investing this much political capital in a politician who all but tells them about her intention to eventually betray them," unquote.
So in terms of this much political capital, is she talking about an entire hour on the Rachel Maddow show? Is that what she's talking about?
An hour on Rachel Maddow and an hour on Nicole Wallace and an hour on Joe Scarborough and constant repetitions and reiterations of those clips on every – Lawrence O'Donnell just oozing over what a hero she is and what a noble person she is. It is just sickening. I mean, I appreciate the help.
And, but, you know, the Iraqi baby blood that buys her suits is not mentioned.
My question before all of the interviews began was, who's going to be the brave soul who asks her, okay, that's all interesting and great and true. What about all the really horrific lies, bloody, monstrous lies you were telling about Democrats like 3 years ago?
Yeah.
What about those?
How did the beer taste at the Rose Garden party where you voted and then partied to take away my health insurance?
Yeah, you enjoyed that.
At the Trump Rose Garden party.
And how about that Democrats murder babies outside of the womb?
Outside of the womb at 9 months.
Outside of the womb. Yes. And Democrats are pure evil.
Yeah.
Do you
what
still believe
that?
Do you still believe, or did you believe it then? Or was it just some shit you were saying to get elected?
Yeah.
And the thing about winning Liz Cheney's approval is this. The Republican Party doesn't work that way.
No,
the Republican Party is, if you are with them, you are a hero. The minute you cross Trump, you're dead to them. You're not going to bring anybody over with you. The minute Liz Cheney stepped out of her 93% voting record supporting Donald Trump and supporting his policies and calling him a great leader and calling him wonderful. The minute she crossed that line, she was out of the leadership. She was out of the party, and she lost her own election in the state where her dad and she basically run the place to a lunatic.
To a whack job, yes.
By a blowout. And that's when she started to appeal to, you know, us baby-eating, bloodthirsty Democrats to cross the line and support her, because maybe that would be fun for us to do. And I appreciate all the stuff she says about Donald Trump, but it's not anything we didn't already know or at least deduce.
MSNBC could have had Digby on, as you always say.
Yep, easily.
Would have said the same thing.
Anyway, so
Little Brown could have published a book by anyone.
Oh yeah, else. there are a dozen books that could be written just from Steve Gilliard's archives.
Yeah,
about the Republican Party and its trajectory going back to 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005. That are insanely prescient about where we are now. And nobody wants to hear that, because nobody wants to be on a panel with some asshole like Driftglass or Blue Gal, who every time Michael Steele opens his mouth, we say, remember that time you lied and pretended to be a Democrat so you could win in Maryland?
Remember that?
And remember how you failed at that? Remember how you said all the bigots were gone from the GOP because you personally drove them out? Remember saying that?
For 3 whole years,
And then you turn to, you know, Joy Reid or Chris Hayes and say, why aren't you asking Michael Steele these very obvious questions, guys? And that's when security comes and takes you away. So, anyway.
This is not as important a story, but it made me laugh. So I'm going to end our regular part of the show before the news roundup with this. I wrote a post today called "Will Fox News Retract Their False Retail Theft Stories?" It turns out, Driftglass, that Reuters is reporting that all the massive crime wave stories about retail thieves swarming through the nation's shopping hellholes. That was all bullshit. Yeah. The main lobbying group for U.S. retailers retracted its claim, this is Reuters, that organized retail crime accounted for nearly half of all inventory losses in 2021. According to spokesperson Danielle Inman, the claim that organized crime accounted for nearly half of all inventory losses was based on 2-year-old testimony from Ben Duggan, former president of the advocacy group Coalition of Law Enforcement and Retail, or CLEAR. And so the original data came from a former president of a group called CLEAR, which is a nonprofit, which encourages cooperation between retail outlets and police departments. And their conference this year is sponsored by a whole bunch of, guess what? Private security firms.
You're kidding me.
No. With names like Control Tech, Arms Security Corporation, and Raptor Vision. You know, these people like the company Raptor Vision might actually possibly maybe have a few reasons to blow up stories and statistics about retail theft, because that's their business. But wait, there's more from Reuters. Some law enforcement sources, including a November report from the Council on Criminal Justice, suggest that shoplifting outside major cities like New York has decreased since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. At a January earnings call, Walgreens CEO told investors that, quote, maybe we cried too much when reporting rising shoplifting the previous year.
Aw.
Yeah, and here's what I wrote. Yeah, you cried too much, Walgreens CEO, but your tears are nothing compared to the massive wail that rose up from Fox News, who in 2021 suggested in more than one segment that retailers were to blame for the crime wave in America because they had supported Black Lives Matter.
That's right. They were asking for it.
They were just asking for it. You know.
That's right. You know how that. You know how they are.
But now that some actual evidence and some organizations are proving, and even the Walgreens CEO are all saying, well, this was all bullshit, we can totally expect a retraction of those stories on Fox with the same red siren light that accompanied the original airings, right?
Absolutely.
Right, Fox?
Absolutely.
Right?
And speaking of red siren lights, I just looked over my shoulder.
Yeah.
There is a there's an MSNBC red alert. They're talking about what Liz Cheney said on their own on network yesterday.
That's the breaking news. Liz Cheney was alert. On another MSNBC show.
No, they're running reruns of what she said on somebody else's show under the chyron red alert. And, you know, because you know what gives Liz Cheney credibility among the five Republicans who will listen to her? Ari Melber and Joy Reid applauding her as a hero of the revolution.
Ari Melber, red alert. She was on Joe Scarborough this morning. Yeah. That's the red alert. All right. Yeah. Drift Class, we got to do a news roundup.
Yes, we do. It was a big news week.
The President Bidening continues.
That's right.
Lindsey Graham warned Liz Cheney to get on board with Trump 2024 or else the world will be truly on fire.
Yeah. Come on. And that is an explicit threat of violence.
Right?
That's a threat. That's a threat against her, which is now pretty common on the Republican side. Yep. This is also Lindsey Graham on his plan to kill Obamacare by turning the program over to the governors. Quote, I would like to get the money, power out of Washington and back to the states. I think we should block grant it back to the states, unquote. Yeah, that'll kill it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Tim Sheehy, the front runner for Montana's GOP Senate nomination, recently told a group of voters that the U.S. needs, quote, to return health care to pure privatization.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in July, Georgia launched a partial Medicaid expansion program because they are desperate to keep rural hospitals open without expanding Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So they started a program called Georgia Pathways to Coverage that the state had to sue the federal government to enact. So they used their state's lawyers and taxpayer money to sue the federal government so that they wouldn't have to expand Medicaid and instead could create their own program, which might be good. But here's what it does. Georgia Pathways slightly relaxes the state's strict coverage rules so that adults with incomes up to 100% of the federal poverty level or who earn up to $14,600 a year are eligible for Medicaid. So if you make $15,000 a year, you're shit out of luck in Georgia.
Those are podcast wages, Blue Gal.
Those are podcast wages. They sure are. The plan makes Georgia the only state to currently require Medicaid recipients to work. We all know how that works out.
Uh-huh.
Other states have tried it. It fails. The state plans for about 100,000 people to gain coverage in the program's first year. If it reaches that number, coverage would cost the state about $2,490 per new enrollee. Full Medicaid expansion would make about 482,000 Georgians eligible for coverage and would cost about $496 per new enrollee. Driftglass, it would cost them $496 a person, not $496,000, not $2,496, just $496.
Which
under $500 a person instead of $2,490 per person.
So that's, if I'm not mistaken, less by
It's a lot less.
Uh-huh.
And as I tweeted, this article came out in the Florida Phoenix. Georgia Republicans want their taxpayers to pay more for less just to spite a guy who hasn't been president for over 6 years and will never be president again.
They
really don't give a shit if black people die. What's going on. Republicans consider black lives to be less valuable.
And they really, really
and
hate.
They enact that. They pass laws that enforce that racism.
And
you make $15,000-$16,000 in an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not eligible for Medicaid in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, fascists.
Well, don't forget, they also hate the black president who made all this possible.
See, they got to make a point about it being Obamacare, which was a word they coined that caught on, just like Dark Brandon.
Which now we embrace.
Speaking
of crazy people, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House of Representatives, has been hearing from God again. That's always good. He told a gathering of Christian nationalists that weeks before he became House Speaker, quote, the Lord told me very clearly, unquote, to prepare to become a Moses who will lead the nation through a, quote, Red Sea moment. Just let that sink in for a moment. Speaker Mike Johnson also wrote a glowing foreword for a book filled with conspiracy theories and homophobic insults, just like Moses did.
Just like Moses, yeah.
Just like
right.
Moses. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Now, the pro-DeSantis super PAC, Never Back Down, which you often called Never Shut Up or Never Stop Whining or whatever. Anyway, that super PAC has fired its CEO, Kristen Davidson, just 10 days after the previous chief executive resigned. It is also reported that the chairman of Never Back Down, former Nevada Attorney General Adam Laxalt, a longtime friend of DeSantis, also resigned. He resigned this week, Driftglass, writing to other members of the group's board that after months of campaigning, I need to return my time and attention to my family and law practice.
Mm-hmm.
This is less than 3 months before Iowa.
Yeah, this is what a death spiral looks like.
This is just saying it's over.
It's over, man. I don't want to be caught in the undertow as you sink below the wave. So I'm going to go spend time with my family and law practice.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is calling for his thugs to intimidate voters in various places. See if you can spot the pattern in the places he has chosen. Quote, the most important part of what is coming up is to guard the vote. And you should go into Detroit, Philadelphia, and some of these places, Atlanta. And you should go into some of these places. And we have to watch these votes, unquote. What do all these places have in common, blue gal?
Black people counting the votes.
Yeah, a lot of black voters in all those places that he wants his thugs to invade and intimidate and threaten. This is when you call it the National Guard.
All right, let's have it. Yeah, they should. And I'm worried that Jimmy Carter isn't going to be around to insist on monitors for the American election to go fairly.
Well, let's you and I get blue helmets, paint UN on them, and go to Georgia, shall we?
There you go. There you go. Here's some good news and a fun fact. Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness programs have been so effective that overall outstanding U.S. student debt is shrinking for the first time in decades. That is really good news.
That's wonderful good news. And here's some funny news. A BBC host says the PR team cut short Kelsey Grammer interview when he reaffirmed his support for Donald Trump. This is from the Hollywood Reporter, Deadline Hollywood. Quote, Kelsey Grammer sounded curt this morning when he brusquely told a BBC Today program interviewer that he still supports Donald Trump, but according to his interviewer, his curtness did not tell the full story. Justin Webb said the Frasier star was perfectly happy to go on talking about his support for the former POTUS. The Paramount Plus PR team was less so, unquote. Yeah, shut up.
Yeah. Now, many of you may be aware we are in the middle of Zapadan season.
We are.
Zapadan runs from December 4th, which was Bummer Knocked, the day that Frank Zappa died, to his birthday on December 21st. And this is just a fun time to avoid the commercialism that is the Christmas season. And we also celebrate the time when there is no Frank between his death and birth. And it's by celebrating Frank Zappa, which is awesome.
What's the motto of Zapadan, honey?
The motto of Zapadan is expect miracles.
Well.
And there are always miracles that happen during Zapadan. And the Zapadan miracle this year, at least one of them, is that Kevin McCarthy is going to resign at the end of the month.
Oh, no.
Yes. Bye-bye, Kevin McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Expect miracles during Zapadan. And anytime you see something wonderful happen, I mean, we got, it was a small check, but we got an unexpected check from the state of Illinois.
We did.
Today. Because I had paid for the two younger children's Medicaid during the pandemic. And they passed a law that said no one had to pay for Medicaid during the pandemic. And so they gave me a little refund of that money. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't much, but still, that's a Zapadan miracle.
And Kevin McCarthy is now the last of the young guns to go down swinging.
Happy Zapadan, everybody. Yeah.
So, and as I did a little post today or yesterday about Mama, take these young guns away from me, put them in the ground. I can't shoot them anymore. Knock, knock, knocking on Kevin's door.
Oh, there you go.
Bye-bye, Kevin McCarthy. Chris Christie, in the debate we learned, wants to protect parents' rights, even their right to allow their kids to be transgender, because he doesn't think, listen carefully, the government is capable of making such decisions. And a lot of people on the internet said basically, that's really cool. Now do abortion.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is refusing to rule out abusing power if reelected president. In a Fox News town hall, Sean Hannity begged Trump to please deny that he would abuse power to seek revenge on political opponents if he returned to the White House. You're not going to be a dictator, are you? No, no, no. Other than day one.
And
I would never abuse you, Driftglass, by rewriting a David Bowie song. But no. We can be dictators for just one day.
Just
it's not
going
to work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now I have a thing to do. I got to go. I can't do that to David Bowie. I just can't.
You can't do it to David Bowie. You can't.
And it's a wonderful song about alcoholism, actually.
It is.
My friends that I used to work with at Columbia College, who were a little bit younger than me, didn't realize that. And I said, listen very carefully to the lyrics. He's talking about addiction and abuse and maybe
getting through one day sober.
One day. Yeah.
Surviving one day as a sober person. Yep.
It's a great song anyway, but listen to it from that perspective. And it's really sweet and touching and deep in its own way. The 10 Wisconsin Republicans who posed as fake electors for Trump admitted that Biden won the state in 2020. And we was real stupid. We're real sorry. Please don't put us in jail. As a part of a legal settlement, the group agreed to withdraw their inaccurate filings, acknowledge that Biden won the presidency, and not to serve as presidential electors in any election where Trump is on the ballot.
That's different from we promise never to do it again.
Right.
If they try to serve as an elector for Trump or if Trump is on the ballot, they go to jail. Yeah.
They go to jail. The agreement also requires the 10 Republican activists to provide, quote, full cooperation with any ongoing or future Justice Department probes related to the 2020 presidential election and the January 6th riots at the Capitol. So be ready to testify, or again, the offer is withdrawn and you're going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A Nevada grand jury charged 6 Republicans who acted as fake pro-Trump electors as well. Nevada joins Michigan and Georgia as the third state to charge pro-Trump activists who falsely asserted that Trump had won the election in their state. I am still waiting for some consequences for all the election counting shenanigans in Arizona.
Yeah. Oh, God. You mean the cyber ninjas?
Assholes? He's disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the money. He took the money and left.
Yeah. We'll find him. We'll track him down. We'll hunt him down like a dog. House Republicans under Speaker Mike Johnson, who speaks often to God and thinks of himself as Moses, are blurring surveillance footage from the January 6th attack on the Capitol because they don't want the rioters, who are their voters, to be charged with crimes, which is awfully
nice. That's obstruction of justice.
It really kind of...
And then he admitted it at a microphone like Moses.
Yeah, that's right. Just like Moses. Just like Moses.
The White House warned it will be unable to continue providing weapons and assistance to Ukraine if Congress doesn't approve additional funding by the end of the year. This is a job for Mitch McConnell to tell House Republicans to cut the shit. This is going to cost them the Senate next year.
This is entirely McConnell's problem.
In letters to party leaders in the House and Senate, White House Budget Chief Shalanda Young said inaction threatens to kneecap Ukraine on the battlefield that will let autocracy prevail. Do you know how many fucking Ukrainian American voters there are in Ohio?
Yeah. In Chicago. Everywhere.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. Yep.
McConnell knows how to count votes.
Yep. He sure does. And he knows.
And this is his problem. He's got to crack the whip.
Yeah. Well, he's got to come out and say something. This is if he wants to lose the Senate by more than he's about to lose it. I keep our fingers crossed.
I mean, I'm already predicting 38 votes in the House.
Yeah.
Democrats are going to gain 38 votes in the House. That's my prediction.
Maybe 39 because,
Is very tight and I'm scared, but.
The House might be 39 because there was another Zapatan miracle, Blue Gal.
Oh.
Yeah. The House voted to expel a guy named George Santos, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Santos, is that it? And once again, it fell to Democrats to do the heavy lifting since most Republicans, including Speaker Mike Johnson, voted to let him stay.
Yep. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week is an internet kitten.
Aw.
And this internet kitten is Finnegan, a wee kitten who fell asleep in his bowl of freshly poured cat food.
Oh, so efficient.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, Finnegan eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor, when he's not sleeping in it. Whether you serve Pet Store Perfection or Dollar Store Dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand, or sleep on the kitchen floor, and demand that the food he eats is only freshly poured.
Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured.
You can visit Finnegan at our Facebook page or website, and you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. And someone sent Driftglass a belated birthday card this week.
It did. It was very
sweet.
Thank
you very much
for
that.
Yeah.
That was really sweet.
We get these things in the mail, and they're incredibly nice and sweet, and sometimes they don't have return addresses. But thank you so much for thinking
of me. Yeah, and if you want to send us a large envelope full of cash with no return address, we won't say nothing.
Yeah, we call that Alderman style. So just slide it in the post office, no fingerprints, nobody says nothing, everything's cool. But really, do not forget our gourmet coffee guidelines. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, please buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our actual job. If you can spare $5 a month or more, please spare $5 a month or more as a Patreon at patreon.com/proleftpod. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please intimidate someone else into listening to it as well. And thank you for doing that.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the internet kitties think Taylor Swift totally deserves to be Time's Person of the Year.
Thank you, Driftglass.
I love you, Blue Gal.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's think about living.
Think about loving.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2023 DGBG Productions.